The Portsmouth Invitational Tournament has wrapped up. I'm Stephen Gillespie, and I'm here to recap the last day, day four of the pit. But before we do that, let's go ahead and party. We are live here on the No Ceilings NBA Draft Show, here on the No Ceilings NBA YouTube channel. We're also on your podcast player of choice. I am Stephen Gillespie, and I'm flying solo here in Portsmouth, Virginia, before I make my arduous journey back home to Southeast Georgia. But before I left on this long, long car ride and just completely lose myself in my own head on the way to my house, I wanted to wrap up the final day of the Portsmouth Invitational Tournament here with you all, as we have been doing throughout the entire week since we've been here. My co-host Jam's not with me today. That's okay. He's got stuff that he's got to do. But I'm here to bring you my in-person perspective, thoughts, things that I'm hearing, things that I'm seeing. Want to share that with you all, because without the No Ceilings universe, me being able to go to Portsmouth and cover the game the way that I did would not be possible. Before we get started, anyone who hasn't gone over to NoCeilingsNBA.com and read the Pit Diaries, where Jam and I have been over the past 3 days, well, 4 days here soon. If you're listening live here in a couple of hours, the day four recap will be over and available over at NoCeilingsNBA.com. If you're listening the day after, I totally understand. NoCeilingsNBA.com, a lot of good stuff that we've done covering the Portsmouth Invitational Tournament. Our guy Maxwell Baumbach of No Ceilings did his preview piece where he covered every prospect that was going to be playing in the Portsmouth Invitational Tournament, has words on all of them. Here soon, on Monday, I believe, he's going to have his recap piece. And we have some extra bonus content coming out, Jam and I, from some interviews that we've done as well. So a lot of good stuff recapping the Portsmouth Invitational Tournament, all going to be available over at NoCeilingsNBA.com. So today, what I want to do is break down day four, just like we've been doing. We've done day one, two, and three, kind of highlighting who we call our most impressive players, people who stood out to us. I'm also going to just share some observations, some conversations that have been had in the gym with me being there. So I want to kick things off first with a player who we've mentioned on the website, who we've talked about a little bit here on the show. If you've been following me on social media at Stephen G Hoops, I've tweeted about this guy. I know a little bit about him due to some connections that I have with his agency. The player who, and I believe he 100% was named to the All-Pit team, the 72nd annual Pit team by the selection committee, Kawasi Reeves Jr. out of Georgia Tech. It is pronounced Kawasi, not Kawasi. So it's one of those tricky names if you've never heard it before. Kawasi Reeves Jr., wing out of Georgia Tech. His official measurements at the combine here in Portsmouth listed it, he is an actual 6'7", 194 pounds, with a 6'10 and a half inch wingspan. On the final day yesterday, day four of the tournament, he finished with 34 points, 10 rebounds, one block, one steal, was 13 of 18 from the floor, 3 of 7 from deep, 5 of 5 from the free throw line. The thing that has impressed me the most about Kawasi, there's a few things actually. Like, this kid is super sharp. And I say kid, young man. This young man is super duper sharp, okay? From Georgia Tech, I've talked about it a number of times. I've written about it a little bit as well. Has two published, you know, he's written and published two books as a college athlete. That's fantastic stuff. One of the most, one of the best interviews that the NBA teams have had here at the tournament. You know, I've spoke to a couple of scouts, talking to the agency. A lot of the feedback is that NBA teams are loving this young man because of, you know, not only the way that he plays the game, but who he is as a person, which at the Portsmouth Invitational Tournament, NBA teams, unless you're the Jimmy Butler or Derek White, you know, ever so often, and Alex Caruso even every so often one of these borderline all defense, borderline all NBA, in Jimmy Butler's case, definitely all NBA talents. Those are hard to find. What NBA teams are mostly looking for are people who can complete and complement their current rosters. Okay, so being able to come in and interview the way that Kwesi has, on top of the dominant performance that he's had on the court, that's something that NBA teams are looking for. Okay, so enough of the intangibles about Kwesi. Just sharp kid. I'm blown away by him. Young man, excuse me. The thing that's impressed me the most with Kwesi is that from game 1, 2, and 3, he has literally gotten more confident and more productive as the tournament has gone on. You look at him and you kind of think about him being a more finesse based, afraid of contact, more perimeter oriented. Absolutely not. With the confidence and, you know, the momentum that Reeves has had coming into this game, he was fully confident in his shot. He was 3 of 7 from deep. Deep range on this jumper too. Rises up. Excellent lift on the jump shot. Smooth, repeatable release. Fantastic player. Does everything that you would want from a three aspect of his game. He also got to the rim a fair amount too, which, again, you look at him, you think he might be a little bit afraid to mix it up in the paint. Not at all. He was able to attack the glass at a high rate using his length and elevation to secure rebounds and push the break as well. So some cool things that you were able to see from him in terms of a rebounding aspect of his game. He finished in traffic on his offense as well. Defensively, good lift, good elevation, good hustle. He is pretty adept at, you know, away from the ball. If the offense wants to throw a skip pass in his direction, He does a good job of kind of managing the balance of, okay, I'm watching my man, I'm watching the ball, and I'm looking to see where everybody else is on the floor. So he kind of toggles between all of those things effortlessly. And if teams just assume that they're going to throw a skip pass in his direction, that's a pick six. He's going to intercept the pass. He's going to run it down the court, probably slam dunk it, but, you know, we'll lay it up as well. Can finish with some unique finishing angles too. Speaking of the layups, you know, he had some where he would drive, let's just say, you know, driving on the right side of the court, go up with his right hand, but he would finish, just kind of do a cradle maneuver, finish on the other side of the rim, using the rim to help protect the ball so he is able to finish and score. Just sharp all around, okay? And then defensively, intercepting passes, effortless elevation despite being a little bit thin. Can rise up, challenge, and contest shots, not afraid at all of being a little bit more physical. And again, from the end of his college basketball season, has already put on a significant amount of weight. Looking to see if that continues, because he already has great athleticism at his current size. Adds a little bit of power to his game. There's more of a diamond in the rough that you're looking at here with Kwesi Reeves. So I think that he did a fantastic job. Obviously, the committee did as well, naming him to the All-Pitt team in Portsmouth. Obviously, should be worthy of a combine invite going into Chicago. Really loved what I saw from him on the court. Really love what I've heard about him off of the court. I just think that he's got the tools, he's got the motor, he's got the drive and the intelligence to be a contributor at some level of the NBA. Again, finished with 34 points and 10 rebounds in the final moments of the tournament. And I just want to mention too, while I'm talking about the tournament, typically speaking, and this is my second year attending the Portsmouth Invitational Tournament live, I've seen it on, you know, streaming services and stuff like that, more so than just the 2 years that I've been covering it live. I was actually surprised by how many scouts and fans and media personnel were still in attendance on the last day. Typically, people are looking to get back home. You know, the playoffs are going on. Shout out to those who are grinding away watching NBA playoff film. There's other sporting events going on. If you're a wrestling fan like I am, WrestleMania is taking place over the weekend as well. Kwesi being able to take advantage of a lot of NBA scouts still being in attendance, and the rest of the players too that we're going to be covering here today, a lot of people still in attendance. And I think that that speaks to the fact that this was a great field. The teams, by and large, were excellently assembled. A couple of gripes that I could have if I was trying to be a perfectionist here, but ultimately was still pleased with the overall effort and energy that all the prospects and the coaches and the staff all brought to the Portsmouth Invitational Tournament. So Kawasi Reeves Jr., awesome performance from him. I'm looking to see, I definitely should be deserving of a Chicago, you know, the G League Elite Camp invite, should be in attendance for that, okay? And if he is, I want to see how he competes, stepping up in level of competition. Now, played at D1 programs, was at Florida first, at Georgia Tech after, some pretty good levels of competition, but I want to see him in that combine setting, see how he adjusts to everybody else around him, also all trying to punch their way up into the NBA. So fantastic performance from him. I want to transition now to a player that I think there are a couple of players that you could argue were in desperate need for a really strong performance for the final day of the Portsmouth Invitational Tournament. Perhaps none more so than Robert McCray V, the guard out of Florida State. Measured in at 6'4" with a 6'5" wingspan, not a condor out there, okay, and 190 pounds. In his last performance of the Portsmouth Invitational Tournament, or the Pit, 20 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 steals, 2 blocks, 7 of 12 from the floor, 4 of 6 from deep, 2 of 2 from the free throw line. Now, to put the areas of concern out there first for Rob, even in this game, he had 5 turnovers. So you're looking at a 3 assist to 5 turnover ratio. High usage guard. Turnovers have kind of strangely existed with him at different levels of competition. Even at Florida State, even though he's putting up these high assist percentages, he's overall making really strong decisions. Turnovers have kind of always been a bugaboo for him, if you will. And watching him in person, these turnovers aren't things that I don't think is a processing issue, especially in a tournament like this, where Quidair Copeland, I'm not going to really talk about him a lot, but in his last game, he's had a strong performance all the way through the Portsmouth Invitational Tournament. Even he opened this game up with some pretty significant turnover issues. A lot of these guys have never played together, so there's chemistry stuff that's built in. That's why NBA teams, after they draft and do free agency, they have a couple of months to where they can get together, do some practices, and get a little bit of a feel for each other, where they like to be, things of that nature. These players have only essentially had a week to get to know each other and understand the feel. So I don't look at the 5 turnovers as a processing issue for Robert McCray, but I could understand those who would be concerned because of the large sample size that we have seen from him transferring up from Jacksonville University out of Jacksonville, Florida, and going to play for Florida State. First time ever in real high level of competition. He needed a strong game today. And what really did it for him was that it wasn't the first shot that he made, which was a 3-pointer, just as, you know, I say simple, but just a common catch-and-shoot 3-point shot. What really kind of ignited the confidence, and it was very tangible to see out on the court, was that driving to the left wing hits he attacked the basket a lot throughout this tournament. So if you're defending him and you're kind of paying attention to what's been going on over the past couple of days, Robert was very adept at, you know, driving and kicking. That's a very big part of his game. He wants to put on a little bit of rim pressure, use that strong frame of his. Even though he's not very long, very strong, the squared upper body, the top of the shoulders with the filled out the depth of his shoulders, the broadness of his frame as well. Using that strength to engage the defense, to collapse them, pass the ball out to open teammates. Robert, the second possession that he was pretty noteworthy for me, was he looked like he was going to attack the basket, drive and attack the defense, try to force them to collapse. His man really went into a recovery state to try to stick with him. Robert hit him with a step back, pulled up, hit a 3-point shot. And at that moment, you could really see, okay, he's feeling himself a little bit more. You're probably going to hear me use the word aggression a lot here on the show. If I had a sort of underlying theme for today's or for that slate of games yesterday, it would be aggression, because there were a few guys who needed a strong performance on day four to kind of help preserve some of the good things that they had going for them throughout the season. Robert McRae had a great ACC tournament, strong performances, scoring over 20 points in matchups multiple times. Had a one-point performance in Portsmouth, so seeing him be able to come in, drop 20 points in a game, sharing a team with Kylan Boswell, which I mentioned earlier that if I had a couple of little gripes, I think McRae and Boswell sharing a team probably wasn't something that I would have personally done, but I understand that there's a bunch of things in consideration when is, you know, assembling these teams. I would have liked to have seen McRae not have Boswell as the other guard on this team, maybe somebody else. But seeing Robert really take hold of this team, hit the tough three-point shots that he did. And then I'll say, too, that the athleticism, especially the vertical athleticism, hasn't really been there for McRae throughout the tournament so far. Today it was, and day four it was. You know, he got up and challenged a shot at the rim, elevated very, very high off the floor. So it was good to see McRae be aggressive, show the athleticism, show the defensive prowess, rip the ball away, poke the ball away, be a menace in passing lanes, run down the floor, finish in traffic as well, be able to show multiple aspects of his game on the offense and defensive end and show some efficiency. I know there's a lot of people within the scouting and within the agent community as well who I've spoken to over the past few weeks coming into the tournament. There are some strong cases that you could make for McRae to be sort of one of these quote-unquote undervalued prospects within this draft class in comparison to some of the other names that you'll hear discussed. I've seen analytical comparisons to A.J. Mitchell. I've heard just so many good things about him character-wise and work ethic-wise. So for him to be able to come in and have the performance that he have and sort of preserve some of that reputation was a massive win for Robert McRae. I want to go now to a player who played at Mississippi this year. We're going to talk about a couple of Mississippi guys here on the show today. And I even mentioned this over at NoCeilingsNBA.com when this piece releases. If you're watching live, it should release at around 12:30 p.m. Eastern time. I mentioned in my piece that I don't know if there is another player who I was more conflicted in including on my most impressive player list than AJ Storr from Mississippi. There's a lot of reasons why, and I don't mean this as like a negative slide at all. You know, here at No Sailings, we look at things in a positive lens, but I'm going to talk a little bit before I make the point, okay? So I was kind of conflicted on including AJ here because, you know, so many people that I talk to about the importance of an event like Portsmouth is that NBA teams, again, they're not looking for their all NBA players. They're not looking for their high usage guys at Portsmouth Invitational Tournament. Okay. With that in mind, AJ, I could have written about him and had him in a couple of my pieces, if not all of them so far over at NoSlingsNBA.com because of how he just looks like an NBA player. Okay. Just to put it simply, looks like an NBA player listed at 6'4.5", 201 pounds, an almost 6'10 inch wingspan. Very explosive, tested very well athletically. Like if you go over and look on the Portsmouth side, I believe they have it, but some of the, you know, the reaction drills, the vertical drills, pretty much every athletic test that AJ did, he didn't like blow the doors off, but he tested very well. There's an NBA athlete in AJ Storr. So the athleticism's there. The length is there. He's got a plus 5-inch wingspan, okay? Good athlete, very strong. You look at him, he's got the definition and the mass that you want at a player of his size. And he has, you know, a good handle, can get to his scoring spots at will. His team routinely turned to him to hit some post fades, mid fades, pull up 3-point shots, attack the basket, finish through contact, get to the free throw line. A lot of high usage, kind of guard wing things that stand out. And he did it efficiently. In this game, he had 23 points, 10 rebounds, and 4 assists. One steal, was 6 of 8 from the floor, 4 of 7 from the 3-point line, 3 of 4 from the free throw line. There was just so many good things that he did as a scorer in this game that you really like to see. But it's all on high usage. How does that translate in a supplementary, ancillary role? I will say that the reason why I felt more comfortable today, including AJ Store in my most impressive players list, was because he did a lot more of those ancillary things. He understood that his athleticism, strength, explosiveness, and his handle, again, underrated aspect of AJ's game is how good his handle can be. Attacking the basket, attracting the gravity of the defense, creating easy passes for his teammates, that showed true today. And then using his length, using his athleticism and explosiveness to be able to go up and secure rebounds on both ends of the court. So seeing and understanding that, coupled with the fact that he has there's a certain level of ease that AJ has in getting to his spots and looking to score. I don't know. I'm just more curious, I guess, to say, I want to see him ride this momentum that AJ has. I want to see AJ ride this momentum into deeper combines. And if I'm an NBA team, I'm looking to see, and I want to communicate this to him, is that how quick are you on the catch? And what I mean by that is, are you able to grab a pass and make a point five decision? Am I going to shoot as soon as I catch it? Am I going to drive and kick as soon as I catch it? Or am I going to pass and move on to another action as soon as I catch it? None of this stop and survey, pump fake, jab step, go back up to another pump fake and then attack. I'm not looking to see any of that stuff at a deeper, you know, a higher level combine in Chicago with more talent around you. I want to see how well he can process the game upon the catch, because I know that he's got good scoring, you know, he's got a scoring bag, if you will. I know that he can think the game pretty well. I've seen it. I watched it in person, but that's as a high usage guy. What do you look like when you have to make a faster decision upon the catch? That's what I want to see from AJ Store. Going down the list, I mentioned with Rob McRae that there are a few players that really needed a strong Portsmouth Invitational Tournament performance. I would say Rob McRae was the 1A within that ranking. 1B was Cade Tyson, the kind of wing forward combo out of Minnesota. I'm going to say something that I know a lot of that the people who are anthro-pilled are going to probably, they're probably going to throw up in their mouth a little bit here. Listed at 6'7.5", 198 pounds, 6'6.5" wingspan. So a negative wingspan. People, I can hear you already just screaming at me through the through my headphones already, even though I really can't hear you. But Cade Tyson came into this tournament with an argument to be made that he was the best shooting prospect within this class. I'm sure Donovan Atwell fans and truthers out there will say, or probably screaming at me as well. So I got a lot of people yelling at me right now. But I think that you could legit make an argument for Cade Tyson because he's a good movement shooter, and he's got the size that NBA teams are going to want in terms of height, not the wingspan, but the height. I think that coming into this tournament, you could make an argument that Cade Tyson was the best shooter within this class. He didn't really shoot well in the tournament so far, but we saw a lot from him that if you just throw out, like, I know that this guy is going to be able to shoot. What else does he do? Cade showed a lot of good defensive and rebounding, some good things in that regard throughout the tournament, but today he really stepped up as a scorer. He had 24 points, 3 rebounds, 1 assist, was 10 of 13 from the floor, 3 of 5 from deep, 1 of 1 from the free throw line. And he didn't just shoot. Obviously, you know, he made 13 shots, or excuse me, he made 10 shots. 3 of those came from deep. Again, underlying theme of the of this day of the tournament, aggression. Cade was aggressive. Of course, he shot the 3 ball, but he was able to drive and attack on the offensive end, finishing in the paint. He did get a steal, which led to a good transition look as well. 3 rebounds doesn't really tell the full story of the tournament, but he was able to mix it up on the glass. And one of the times that he attacked and scored in traffic, he was able to get to the free throw line and convert on the and one opportunity. With Cade, it's interesting again because now we have more data that we can say whether or not he's a sleeper or if he's a guy that you kind of maybe pass on and try to get with a two-way sort of a contract opportunity. I certainly think that Cade is going to play in the G League at some level. Whether or not he sees any NBA time, we'll see. Here's to John Polakidis last year being a guy who I wasn't particularly high on, but took advantage of a Portsmouth Invitational Tournament opportunity, had a couple of good showings, and now got strong minutes for the Dallas Mavericks in his rookie season. So you could maybe look at a Cade Tyson and see, and yeah, I'm doing the white-on-white thing, it's okay. But you can look at a Cade Tyson and understand that he had one really strong shooting game. The other ones, you kind of know what you're getting with Cade as a shooter. You're probably buying him as a shooter if you like him at all. But I feel confident and comfortable with seeing some of the ways that he was able to mix it up on the defensive end. Him being able to, upon a pick and roll opportunity for the offense, when he's defending that, the offense will send the guy that he has switched to diving at the basket. There are a few times where Cade, you know, hypothetically speaking here, shut the door on that play from being able to be executed on the dive, because Cade, even though he's only got a 6 foot, 6.5 inch wingspan, saw presenting himself very largely as an obstacle that the offense is going to have to kind of like pass over, shut the door on the play. Offense has to move on to the next progression. That's the sort of thing that you want to see from a guy who is going to be thought of as a shooter. And again, mix it up on the glass as well. Some good things that we were able to see in multiple areas of his game. Really love the fact that he had a strong scoring performance here on day 4. Let's move on to the next guy, Seth Trimble, who, argument to be made that he's the biggest dog in this tournament, despite the fact that he is quote unquote only 6'3", 200 pounds, a very strong and sturdy built guard with a 6'8.5 inch wingspan. So you love to see that. If you're going to be a defensive minded guard who your best skill is just kind of like your defensive versatility, despite being a little bit smaller, you like to see the measurements and the strength and then the athletic testing. Again, he was the best tester athletically, particularly in the standing Max Vert measurement that they did, beating out Toby LaWall. You could probably argue that Toby just was like, I've had enough of this testing. I'm done. You guys know how good of an athlete I am. Seth Trimble performed the best in that manner, and he had himself a strong game for 20 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists, 2 steals, 1 block, 8 of 14 from the floor, 2 of 6 from deep, 2 of 2 from the free throw line. I'll argue that for Seth Trimble, if you look at him analytically at face value without any sort of like extra digging, you probably make a case for him like, okay, he's a poor offensive player. There are things about him to be concerned about on that end, regardless of how strong of a defender he is. What's his path offensively to be able to see the floor? How is the offense going to make the defense worth it? You see what I'm saying here. So while I agree with that, if you look at the 3-point percentage at face value, it's very blah. If you look at the pick and roll activity that he brings to the table as a scorer, it's pretty decent. I believe it's at like 68 to 69 percentile in terms of scoring as a 6'3" guard. You would like to see that be a little bit better, particularly for a guy who is strong and as explosive and bursty as Seth Trumbull is. I would invite you to, if you have the Synergy access, go over to Synergy and do a little bit more digging, because you might be surprised that if you include passes on Seth Trumbull's pick and roll ball handler play type, you'll see that he ranks in the 90th percentile, right? So the cognition, another draft buzzword here, the cognition that he has to operate a pick and roll and navigate his way to scoring, which he is capable of, especially in big moments. For some reason, Trumbull really likes to shoot the ball in big moments. He can navigate it as a scorer, but as a playmaker, you could probably talk yourself into maybe there's some underlying like ancillary playmaking that we can get from our 6'3" defensive ace here. And then if you look at the shooting profile, he shot very well contested. I'm always a little bit iffy on guards or players in general who shoot better from deep guarded as opposed to open, but there's a little bit of touch indicator there. So maybe you can sell yourself a little bit more optimistically, offensively speaking, if you love the defense. And in a game like what we saw today, 5 assists, a lot of pick and roll operation, navigating around traffic, kicking the ball out to the open man, throwing a lob, and being able to help his teammate get an easy bucket at the rim. Being able to see some things like that helps Seth Trimble's projectability, maybe a little bit offensively. Competes, uses that verticality and athleticism to secure the rebounds. Probably his most impressive play came from whenever he attacked the rim, throw down a dunk, and just kind of like, he didn't really flex or anything like that, but he just kind of stood there and looked around while the rest of his teammates went crazy around him, dunking over the top of the defender. I wish I wrote it down. I can't remember who it was, but it was an impressive, nasty dunk. And he just was like, yeah, this is business as usual. In the NBA, it's often understated by people in the draft that how important strength and athleticism is. And I almost think that people particularly kind of talk down vertical athleticism in the NBA. Just like being able to score in isolation is almost just kind of like very much a yuck for a lot of people. Those are both very valuable things, and the fact that Seth Trumbull at 6'3" is listed cleanly at 200 pounds, it wasn't just the school boosting up his weight to kind of make him more appealing at face value. The fact that he is really weighted as much as he is, he has the plus wingspan that he does, and he tests as well as he does athletically, you know that the defense is going to be there. He's going to give it to you. Maybe there's some offensive stuff that you can look at that makes the defense worth putting him on the floor. Let's move on to the next guy who, man, I'll tell you that probably the biggest piece of neglect that we had, and I'll throw Jam in here too. Jam, if you're listening, you know I love you, brother. Probably the biggest piece of neglect that Jam and I had on the day 3 recap was leaving off the guy who by far and away was probably my favorite player, if just in terms of like entertainment value for day 4. But Rashawn Agee, the quote unquote big man out of Texas A&M, here's where people are probably like, okay, like what are we doing here? Listed his height, he is listed at 6'6 3/4", 236 pounds. Here's the crazy part. 7'1.5" wingspan. So even though our big man really isn't that tall, very strong, very broad, very physical guy with almost a 7'2" wingspan, insane length, finished the day, and hang on, let me rewind. Day 3, he finished with a clean 15-15. So 15 rebounds day 3 on 15 points. Glaring omission that we had on day 3, and I sincerely apologize to anybody who was probably wondering why we didn't have him. He played his way on to being in the day 4 inclusion, trust me. 27 points, 12 rebounds, 3 assists, 4 steals, was 10 of 13 from the floor, 1 of 2 from deep, and 6 of 7 from the free throw line. Now, just to get out in front of this, I don't know if this works in the NBA, being as short as he is. Like, of course we have outliers, right? We have Draymond Green, you know, Charles Barkley. There are shorter front court players who have gone in. Dennis Rodman. There are shorter front court players. Ben Wallace. There are shorter front court players who have come in and completely outplayed their size due to the verticality that they have, the strength and explosiveness that they have. And for lack of a better phrase, I think dog is overplayed. I kind of want to make wolf a thing, but that might be a little bit too cornball and too unk of me. I'm trying to kill the vernacular here. I think that for AG, what makes it hard is that there's so many reasons to look at him and think that it can't work, right? He just kind of does, though. You know what I mean? Like, I've kind of tongue-in-cheek said that he might be an NFL tight end. And I fully believe that he'd probably be really incredible in that regard. But there are front court players who are that size who make it work. I don't know if he has the same sort of an athleticism, obviously, as like a Ben Wallace or a Dennis Rodman, a Draymond Green, a Charles Barkley. Like, these are all Hall of Fame level talents here that we're discussing at that size. If you want to go a little bit, you know, smaller, a Chuck Hayes type of a role player, shout out to the Chuck Hayes fans out there. There are examples in NBA history of players who are this size that make it work. There's not a lot of modern guys, though, right? There's not a lot of modern guys who were under 6 foot seven who can play the big man spot and succeed in the NBA. But I can't help but just look at Rashawn Aggi and think, or AG, and think, do we at least try? Do we at least see if there's nothing here outlier-ish? Because these measurements would tell you one thing. Watching him in person, you would think that he just is one, he wants to be like this physical force. But there is like some nimbleness. You know, he is he can shuffle his feet really well. There was one play where he jumps a passing lane for a steal. He had four steals again, four steals tonight. He jumps a passing lane for a steal. Now, he intercepts this pass with his right hand. As he intercepts this pass, he kind of goes behind his back to do a between the legs dribble to split the two guys, who the would-be defenders on his left and his right, goes to split those two guys by catching this pass with his right hand, going behind the back and between the legs to continue to push the break. Now, he does stumble and fall, but the motor that AG has goes after this loose ball like a madman, is able to re-secure the ball, push the ball out for the break, and allow the transition opportunity to end in points, okay? Six offensive rebounds in this game. This is indicative of what we've seen from him throughout his Texas A&M season. He, even though he's a little bit shorter, he uses his wingspan really, really well. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that he gets off the floor as quickly as, like, let's say Felix Okpara, another big man within this group of players that we saw in Portsmouth, okay? But he isn't groundbound. He is not without verticality. So using that in conjunction with his Condorian wingspan here, if you will, it was awesome to see. He had some very fun plays too, like a one and one that he had on an offensive rebound, kind of lay in put back where he flexes, you know, and screams after, you know, the whistle is blown. He has another couple of very fun plays where, you know, teammates drive and kick, get him the ball, and he does the, you know, the power up dunk where he grabs the ball, charges up by sinking down into a stance, then leaping up and throwing down nasty one-handed dunks, and, you know, of course, screaming and celebrating and on those plays. I want to go back and look at some stuff with him because he's a very fun player, very talented player. I don't know, again, there's a bit of a paradox here with him. I don't know how it works, but again, I would at least want to give it a shot if I'm an NBA team. Let's move on now to Peter Suter. Suter Sanity was back in the house Suter Mania for wrestling fans. It's in season right now. But Peter Suter, the kind of guard wing player out of Miami of Ohio, had a storybook season with that club this season. Listed at 6'4.5" in shoes, 213 pounds, with a 6'8.5" wingspan. So a little bit of a reach there. You love to see that. And that matches what Jam and I have been talking about over the past couple of days with Suter, where we've talked about how strong he is, the squaredness of the neck and shoulder, right? Like the right angle, but he has the depth in his shoulders, the roundness that you want to see, that definition in his upper body. Very strong guy, which allowed him to get to the free throw line quite a bit in this game, just as it has throughout the entire tournament. There's been a lot of free throws that he has taken because of his understanding the game, being able to feel the game the way that he does, but also using his physical gifts in such a way that he can create contact. And even if he's not going to score, he's going to be able to get to the free throw line to get some points. I know that there are some long-standing concerns with the jump shot, but the thing is that Suter has shot well here in Portsmouth, and he was 3 of 6 tonight. He finished, by the way, let me read this, 16 points, 3 assists, 2 rebounds, 2 steals, was 4 of 7 from the floor, 3 of 6 from the 3-point line, 5 of 7 from the free throw line. He had himself a really good game, and not as good as, you know, his first game on day 2, where he was just, you know, patting his chest. He was really feeling himself that game, but a strong performance. Okay. Moving the ball really well. There were instances, of course, you know, he got 3 assists, but there within the natural flow of the offense, there were moments here where Peter moved the ball with real pop. Again, highlighting some of the strength stuff that you can see with him within his frame. Really just zipping the ball around the floor, a little bit of pop on it. You could almost, it felt like you could just kind of like hear the catch of his teammates, really making the defense work by keeping the ball moving. Getting in on the rebounds looked really good offensively. Now, I did try to take a little bit more note of the stuff that he has to work towards, because if you, and I hate to sound like this, but if you only notice the good stuff with a player in a tournament like this, then you could walk away with AJ Storr looking like he might be the second coming of, you know, Jalen Green or whatever, right? Like, you could walk away feeling really, really good about a player, as you should. You should highlight and take note of the things that all the players do well. But I wanted to scrutinize Peter Suter a little bit more, the same that I would for an AJ Storr, right? I wanted to scrutinize Suter a little bit more because I know that there had to be a reason why some of the numbers look the way that they did and the way that his career has gone, like as a whole. Looking for areas of concern, if you will. Now, defensively, he does make some heady plays, you know, loose ball, go get loose ball, rotate, intercept, pass, things like that. But when he's in a one-on-one situation, there were several, I counted 3, there might have been more, you know, and I'll be completely transparent. As these games are going on, I'm also like kind of talking to people around me about like prospects that they're liking, things that they're seeing, stuff like that. But as I'm watching this game, I noticed at least on three occasions where Peter Suter just kind of gets blown by, right? So if you're looking for reasons to be a little bit of to draw some concern here for Suter, it's that I don't know how he's going to hold up consistently on the defensive end. He has good wingspan. He has good strength. He tries on that end and gives a lot of a crap. You know, there were, for those 3 possessions where I said that he got blown by, there were several possessions where he was in the right place and did the right thing, right? So you kind of have to sift through that. But if you want to look for an area of concern with Suter, it lies on the defensive end. Then how good is the offense to make the defense worth it? You that's kind of like where I'm at here. Now, again, punching his way up, played at Miami of Ohio, is surrounded by kind of like liked talent and competition. He stood out. How is that going to continue in the further on combines that we have left prior to the NBA draft. I think it's feasible to say that there might be a world where Suter ends up as a second round draft pick. I would never close the door on anything like that. But he has played himself into a position to where he is now worthy of me going and taking a look at another deep and dedicated dive when I'm not like in the heat of the moment, if you will, watching these players perform the way that they did. Only a couple more players here, guys, that we're going to talk about. Two more to be exact. I mentioned when I did my AJ Store breakdown earlier that I was going to talk about a couple of Mississippi guys. The other one is Malik Dia. Now, hang on while I take a hit of this water real quick. Thank you for bearing with me if you could hear me swallow my water. I truly apologize, but I got to do what I got to do here. Malik Dia, another guy, just like AJ Store. It's funny how Mississippi was comprised of guys who I would be conflicted on here at the Portsmouth Invitational Tournament. I could have written about Malik Dia before today. He has had some solid moments, some solid performances. On day four, Malik Dia, the big man out of Mississippi, listed at 6'9", 213 pounds. I might have that weight wrong. In fact, I know I do. I didn't update that. I got to go back and change that. But 7'3" wingspan, that's true. I know that to be true for a fact. Dropped 21 points, 5 rebounds, 3 steals, 2 blocks, was 10 of 14 on the night, 0 of 2 from deep, 1 of 1 from the free throw line. Now, the parallels with Store and Dia are there's clear talent there. You know, for a guy who's as big as he is and play the position as he does, there's clear wiggle. Even though he's probably not, if I'm being honest here, he's not the most, you know, physique gifted, if you will. There are some things that you might want to tighten up with him. But he has clear wiggle, clear skill. He is able to get the ball, force turnovers on the defensive end, run up the floor, do a little bit of Euro step, some rip throughs. Very talented and gifted finisher, has a bit of a handle. There are big men who he could match up against and he could make them look silly in an open floor just by how gifted he is as a player. He had 5 rebounds, 3 steals, 2 blocks in this game. Just he has movement. He has skill. He has feel to his game. The things that I would be concerned with are, does he look to move the ball? There was a play in transition where he could have easily given the ball up to a teammate. Instead, he wanted to make sure that he got the transition play. Listening to him talk to his teammate, he scored, looked at his guy and said, "Hey, that's my bad. I'll move it along next time." No assist in this game. Those are the type of things that I want to see Malik do a little bit more. As I've spoken to a number of people who are a part of the NBA, who watch the NBA, things like that, big men are asked to do more in today's game than they ever have been before. You know, we talk about, you know, our Sabonises, our Şengüns, you know, our Jokic's of the world. Those are the guys that we typically think of as ball movers, right? We don't think of a guy like Steven Adams as a guy who you can trust to make the right decision as a passer, but he is. That's not his number one skill. He's a fantastic and one of the, like, he's Hall of Fame level offensive rebounder, but he is a guy who you can run a DHO with. Malik, I think, has the tools. I think that he has the skill to be able to do it, but what's the commitment like? And then is he able to process those kind of like dynamic plays where there's a handoff available to you on one side, there's a cutter available to you on the other side? Who's filling that next gap if either one of those progressions are essentially shut down by the defense? Is he going to be able to swing the rock in those high dynamic offenses that we can see? I trust him to be able to do some very talented and gifted physical things on the court. If it works, I was trying to think late last night, thinking of how it could work in the NBA. And I'm so hesitant to compare anyone to Naz Reid, but there is a little bit of Naz Reid sort of adjacent abilities that he has to his game, to where he can dribble the ball. You want him to be able to shoot it a little bit more, but he's not very efficient as a shooter from deep, even though he does exhibit some mid-range touch, even though he's able to do some of the things that he can on the floor. You want him to be a little bit more dynamic in that sense, okay? So the last guy, I'm going to transition here to the last guy here for the Portsmouth Invitational Tournament. I want to give a shout out to Jordan Riley, the guard out of East Carolina, listed at 6'3.5", 211 pounds, 6'10" wingspan. He finished the game with 16 points, 6 rebounds, 5 assists, 2 steals, a block, was 7 of 13 from the floor, 1 of 3 from deep, 1 of 3 from the free throw line. He was impressive to me in this game, and in talking with Jam, he's been steady throughout the entire tournament, but today he really popped. Now, physically gifted, I went back to look at the testing stuff. I didn't do like a full evaluation, percentile ranking numerically or anything like that, but watching him play basketball and going back and look at the testing, it looks like there's a little bit of a deficit in what the testing would show you just looking at the numbers and then watching him play basketball. It felt like there I was watching a completely different player than what those numbers would indicate, because he's very strong. That 6'10" wingspan at his size, it's very apparent when looking at him, but he's not gangly. You know, I would say he measures similarly to Melvin Council Jr. And now while Melvin is a strong player in his own right, he looks like he's the second part of a Pokemon evolution, to where Jordan Riley is like the Charizard, if you will, of that guard type. Very strong, very gifted, very fit, very aggressive. Again, that underlying theme for day four, aggression. Jordan Riley had it. He had to play the game, or play of the day, maybe of the tournament, where very early on in the game, driving and attacking, going up against Ernest Dude, one of my favorite players in this tournament, and just completely annihilated him. Just Mortal Kombat, your soul is mine, drives in. Ernest Dude jumps up to challenge it. Jordan Riley jumps higher, is stronger, finishes through the chest of his guy, throws it down over the top of him. I believe I yelled an expletive really loudly watching that play, and I was just completely blown away. Now, defensively, this is the player who you can't assume that you're going to be able to just simply walk up and do something around him. He guards his yard very well. He made a couple of steals that were easy dunks in transition. Very explosive. The burst ability that he has in the open floor was mind-blowing. Now, again, using that strength, that length, going up and securing rebounds the way that he did, going up and high pointing the ball on the rebounds too, not just waiting for the rebound to come to him, but going up and just eating it, you know, just going up and grabbing, consuming the rebound, pushing the break, finishing in traffic. There are touch stuff that you got to be concerned with him though. Long term, the 3-point shot, he hit one. It looks decent, I would say, the shooting motion. It's not anything that I think that you have to like wholesale change, but there's a reason why the percentages can kind of look the way that they do with Riley. Very impressed with him overall through that game. But folks, we're going to close out there. I have a long car trip that I'm going to be making here momentarily, but I did want to take a couple of moments to come through and share my day four observations with you guys. The Portsmouth Invitational Tournament was everything that a draft sicko wanted it to be. You know, even in day four, I saw one of the coaches get teed up, and I was just like, I love this. I love that in the Portsmouth Invitational Tournament that a play goes a certain way and that a head coach is getting teed up. That made me laugh. I wrote it down in my notes. I was like, I definitely want to make sure that I pass this along to the No Ceilings community. So thank you all so much for hanging out with me here today on the podcast feed. If you're listening the day after, hit us with a 5-star review and subscribe. But if you're hanging out with us live, I especially want to give you a shout out. I know it's early for some of you East Coasters out there. I know it's really early for you West Coasters and the rest of you out there as well. So thanks for hanging out with me here on a Sunday morning. I hope you all have a good, wonderful rest of your day and your week. Go over to NoCeilingsNBA.com for the Pit Diaries. You're going to get further breakdowns. You're going to get recaps and previews from Maxwell. Again, Jam and I, we had a fun interview that we did a couple of days ago. That's going to be a piece that's released over on the website. And then I think Jam is also doing his Portsmouth Invitational Tournament superlatives. Okay, so a lot of recap stuff coming on throughout the rest of the week. And now we're ramping up into Combine and Intel season two. We have our returners that have announced, you know, Braylon Mullins going back to UConn is kind of shocking the world a little bit with Nick Aminia in tow, and they just got Najee Hines. UConn is looking really strong. Let's see who else stays and goes and announces themselves for the NBA draft. I'm really excited for what the rest of the cycle is going to be looking like. Thank you all for helping us get to where we are right now on the YouTube channel. Like and subscribe. If you're watching, please subscribe. And all that stuff, I know it sounds like, oh my gosh, leave us alone or whatever, but everything that you do in that regard, that simple act, helps us to be able to continue to go to events like Portsmouth, like Hoop Summit, like the Combine, like Summer League, things like that, and come back to you all and share with you everything that we see. So please keep that in mind. Those simple little acts do wonders for us. And we're almost to 8,000 subscribers over there at the Substack too. So thanks for all you readers out there, being from Arkansas. Even I subscribe, so anyone else is without excuse for not subscribing and reading on our Substack feed, okay? So I'm going to get off here. Long road trip ahead of me. I'll go ahead and close out here for the rest of the team, for the No Siblings team, for myself. Shout out to everyone out there who is working hard and grinding out for the rest of the draft cycle, for the basketball community, and for one last time in Portsmouth, Virginia, I'm Stephen Gillespie. You guys have been awesome, and we'll catch up with y'all next time. Much love, y'all.